You're listening to an Airwave Media Podcast.
Hello, pristine, preppy prefects practicing for pedantic perfection. Welcome to Good Job Brain, your weekly quiz show and offbeat trivia podcast. This is episode 240. And of course, I'm your humble host, Karen. And we are your litter of literary little necks.
I'm Colin.
And I'm Chris.
And today we have a special guest. It doesn't happen very often. So everybody give a warm welcome to Neville Fogarty. Yay.
Thanks, Karen. Thanks, Colin. Thanks, Chris.
You might have heard Neville's name before. That is because Neville is a highly respected crossword puzzle designer, and he actually made the Good Job Brain, the crossword in our book.
Thanks. That was a lot of fun to write. It has the names of your favorite Good Job Brain personalities hiding in it. So if you go back to Barnes & Noble or wherever it is.
Kinko's.
Yes, yeah, that's right, Kinko's. You'll be able to enjoy that crossword.
Well, Neville, how did you get into puzzling?
I guess I started solving crosswords about 15 years ago now, back when I was in college. It was my first summer after freshman year, and I had failed to procure a summer job back where I lived. I was having a terrible time trying to find an actual job. So I saw online a posting for a game show that was going to be looking for contestants, a new show called Merv Griffin's Crosswords. And Merv Griffin, the legendary TV personality, the guy who created Jeopardy, he was a crossword addict. And so he had come up with this idea for a new game show based around crosswords. And I said, this can be my summer job. I can learn how to solve crossword puzzles and make thousands of dollars by winning on a game show. And so I did crossword boot camp for 3 weeks that summer by solving every puzzle I could find. And my mom is very good. Like, she's been solving puzzles for decades. And so she would teach me all those little 3 and 4 letter words that show up all the time. And that you only get from practice. And so I treated this like my full-time job, and then went and actually tried out for the show, something I know Karen knows a lot about, ended up getting on it. Although we were the 27th episode that taped, ours was such a good episode that they bumped it to the very front of the season. And we were the first episode aired.
Premiere.
And I ended up winning.
Oh my gosh!
And it was an absolute blast.
This whole thing was so, like, wildly improbable that this would pay off in any way, shape, or form.
It's such a long shot, such a crapshoot, because on this show, and it's okay if you haven't seen it, it ran for one season and it wasn't very well publicized. This was this was right around when Merv passed away. They had started production.
I was going to ask you. Yeah, like,
that's right. This was, I believe, we taped while he was alive and he passed before it actually aired.
Oh gosh.
Oh wow.
So just threading that needle, but yes, the way the show worked was there were 5 contestants on an episode and you worked to solve one crossword, one clue at a time, and there were 2 of the players started, and then 3 players were introduced as spoilers. And there was sort of the Mario Kart blue shell effect in that if the first 2 players failed to ring in and answer correctly, one of the spoilers could ring in and not only take their place, but also all of the cash that they had earned to that point. And then that player would have to spoil back in. It was very intense. So I started at the front. You do the first round. It's normal. It's just 2 people buzzing in on a quiz show. And then after that, they introduce the spoilers for round 2. And then it sort of trades off back and forth in our episode. So I spent some time in the back row as a spoiler, waiting to get a chance to come back in. And And then I regained my podium, and the winner is the person who, at the end of the episode, is in the front with money and has the most money. And so that was me through a combination of study skills, because some things that I had prepped for showed up, and not going to lie, a little bit of dumb luck helped.
You always need luck. It doesn't, I mean, in fact, the more skilled you are, the more luck comes into play, because everyone is skilled that you're competing against. So
for sure.
I just can't believe the story started with, oh, how'd you get in crosswords? Well, I needed a summer job.
Yeah. Like,
the game show winning.
Amazing.
If you don't mind me asking, what did the winner get?
It was mostly cash. So you were winning, you were amassing cash along the way, and I ended up winning $3,450.
Ooh.
You could also win some side trips along the way. They were crossword getaways. They were
the best kind.
Right? Unfortunately, I didn't end up winning one of those because of the trading of podiums, and those prizes went with the podium. But I did also win a trip to Antigua
in
the bonus round. That was my spring break that year.
What are these crossword getaways, and how do I score one?
Crossword getaways absolutely sounds like a late mid, like Nintendo Wii game, you know, that you would come across. You know, it's like, it's a combination of like travel and crosswords. Yeah.
Well, they did make a Wii version of this game show. And I do have a copy of it. I discovered that, in addition to other puzzles on there, they do have the puzzle from my episode, and I found this out while playing it with people.
Twists and turns.
But yes, these days that I mostly do construction of puzzles, including I've been writing cryptics myself for the New Yorker.
Huh.
And so if you caught the cryptic bug, then you might try checking those out. They come out each Sunday online.
I did not realize that, and I will start doing them.
There you go. There's a soft paywall, so just get incognito mode ready.
Gotcha.
And you'll be good to go.
Okay. We need to cut that out. Kidding. Well, Neville, what would you say are your strong categories in trivia, and what are some of your weak categories?
Middle and high school, I would do Geography B and Science Bowl. So I think those are my more academic categories. I also grew up watching a lot of TV. As far as weakness goes, I know that if I were playing pub quiz with y'all, I too would be relying on Colin for some sports knowledge, because that's not great for me.
Actually, it's funny because I was going to bring this up, because speaking of sports knowledge, I learned something about sports that I found very funny that I wanted to share, mostly with Karen, because Karen is probably the one who hasn't heard about this. Colin has probably already heard about this. On September 14th of this month, Wednesday, the Yankees were playing the Red Sox in Fenway Park, and Yankees second baseman Gleyber Torres did something very interesting, because he was at bat. There were two men on base, two outs. He hits it into right field. They attempt to throw home to get the guy coming home, but the throw is not in time. Now the Red Sox try to throw back to first to get Torres, who's still running to first, but they miss it, and the ball goes all the way back into right field again. Torres keeps running, and he gets to third base. He figures he's going to stop at third, but the third base coach waves him home. Torres, who again had been at bat, and the ball is just, you know, being thrown around the stadium at this point, comes home. It's a tight play at the plate, but he's safe. The reason I heard about this is people started talking about it, and this is called a little league home run.
Bumbling kids.
Because it basically defined as a play in which the batter scores with the help of fielding errors by the other team. So yeah.
Hey.
Yep.
A point is a point, man.
That's right. No. That's great for the batter. Yeah, absolutely.
Neville, we're going to put your trivia knowledge to the test. So let's jump into our first general trivia segment, Pop Quiz Hot Shot.
Ba-na-na, ba-na-na.
Every time in my head.
You know, we do it in post, right?
Of course.
Yeah, we don't really speak.
Okay, so we're going to do things a little bit differently. So I do have a random Trivial Pursuit card from the box. And Colin, Chris, you have your Barnyard Buzzers. Neville is our special guest. So what we're going to do is we're going to put him in the hot seat. There are six questions on this card. You get
2 a right of refusal. So you can pass twice. And when if you pass, it'll go to Colin and Chris and they can answer the question. Sure. How's that? How does that sound?
Let's go for it.
Okay, let's go for it. Here we go. Blue Wedge for geography. Neville, the ancient Roman town of Pompeii was destroyed and preserved by the eruption of which volcano in 79 CE?
That was Mount Vesuvius.
Correct!
Yes.
Pink Wedge, the last album to feature the original lineup of Funkadelic has which unappetizing title? Let me read it again. The last album to feature the original lineup of Funkadelic has which unappetizing title?
At the risk of passing too early, because I know that the stakes are incredibly high here.
Yes.
My knowledge of George Clinton is failing me, so I think I will pass.
Ooh, Colin and Chris, buzz in.
Ah, jeez.
I have no idea. Smelly socks.
Dana knows for sure.
Yogurt verps. Yogurt verps.
You know what? You're close.
That's actually you're in the you're in the P-Funk sphere. Yeah.
It is maggot brain. Maggot brain.
I would at least sample a song or two off of yogurt verps.
Dropping soon. All right, Neville, Yellow Wedge. How many members are there in the U.S. House of Representatives? It's multiple choice, but well, I want to see if you know. Okay.
Can I try and earn a pass back by answering pre-multiple choice?
Ooh.
Yes. I'm just making up some rules here. Are there 435 members?
Yes, you're correct. You earned your pass back.
Very well done. Woo. Very nice.
Taking the chance that this Trivial Pursuit card is not really old.
That's a very good point.
That's a really good example of one where when you said it, Karen, I was like, ooh, I don't think I could name it outright, but from multiple choice, I felt very confident.
What was the multiple choice?
Yeah. 335, 435, or 535.
I would have definitely guessed 435.
That's a big range. Good job. Purple Wedge, what is the style of painting that uses opaque watercolors? What is the style of painting that uses opaque watercolors?
I'm going to hazard a guess here because I know that this is an art word, but that's about as specific as I can be with it. Is it impasto?
Incorrect.
Ah.
Colin and Chris, you want to take the steal?
Oh, Chris.
I mean, I know that there might be, I mean, there's obviously more to it than that, than choice of materials, but I'm going to say impressionism.
Incorrect. Colin, art Man, history.
I'm really making myself here. Now, is that a gouache?
Yes!
Okay.
Whoa!
Okay.
Woo!
Go ache. Right. No, it's G-O-U-A-C-H-E. Gouache? Gouache.
As in, go wash your hands. You've got opaque watercolors all over them.
Yes!
That's great. That's really good mnemonic there. Chris Kohler, ladies and gentlemen. And then I'll give you all a freebie here, you know, just since you gave me the platform. The impasto, that is a great art word, and that's like kind of just like
what is
like,
it?
That's like the build up, the visual kind of texture of paint, you know, and a lot of painters, yeah, wear like almost 3D, yeah.
Thank
you. A little bit of a side question: do you guys play Learned League?
Yes,
me too. Learned League is a kind of season based trivia game. Like it's an online site. You get 6 questions a day during the weekday. You're also matched with an opponent, and it's really fun. I'm having a pretty hard season.
I've been invited, and I have not joined because it would be too stressful for me. I know myself and my approach to trivia, and I just know that it would be a source of stress. I have
Colin. I used to like stew about it all day. I'd be like, "Oh, this is in the punch bowl. I'm going to come up with this." And a couple years ago, I said, "That's not fun. Let's just always do this in 5 minutes a day."
Okay. All right.
And like that has greatly improved my enjoyment of it. Like I was, but then I realized it's like, oh, even if I miss one by next week, I will have forgotten that, and I will not feel bad about that.
Yeah,
anymore.
All right. That's actually really good advice, Neville. That is exactly how I have been approaching it. I just could see myself stewing. Yeah, I should just give myself a time limit.
Well, I'll send you guys invites for next season. Back to pop quiz. Here we go. Next question. Green Wedge. Alfred Nobel, father of the Nobel Peace Prize, made his fortune with the invention of which powerful tool? Trivia staple.
I believe, as Jimmy J.J. Walker would say on Good Times, that would be dynamite.
Dynamite. Correct. All right. Now, last question. Orange Wedge. Here we go. Linen fabric is made from the fibers of which plant?
Is that flax?
Yes, it is flax. Wow! Round of applause.
Killing it.
Round.
Good job, everyone. And I'm glad y'all were there to pick up on my lack of art history knowledge.
You know, we say Colin's the sports guy. He's also the fine arts guy.
He is!
He contains multitudes.
Like, I don't know why I've said this enough. Colin is our trivia MVP.
Oh, you guys make me blush.
You guys remember when Trivia Prize was they would cover our dinner check? That was the best era.
Living that like was kings wonderful. At the Elephant and Castle. That's right.
Spend like $100 on dinner and then get it all comped because we won trivia.
Bangers and mash.
Right?
The food too. The food was good. Like it was real
Elephant
food.
Elephant Castle food was so good. Yeah.
Okay, this week. So every fifth episode of Good Job Brain, we don't have a theme or a topic. It is our chance and place to bring quizzes that we wrote and share them with each other, try to stump each other and try to stump you guys, listeners. It's our All Quiz Bonanza number 48.
I'll start us off with a quiz that's actually been kicking around in my head for years. I mean, I've talked on the show before. Oh. You guys know I have my little like sort of backlog list I keep of topics and ideas. This just for whatever reason, this one just never actually got hammered into final quiz form. So I'm very happy to deliver this to you today. So the roots of this quiz go back several years. My wife and I were talking about Wham, of course, the pop sensation. And it was probably right around the time that George Michael passed away, I'm guessing. And we were talking about how, you know, Wham, I mean, it's a two-person, you know, outfit, right? And millions of records, huge number one hits. But it for so many people, it's, oh, George Michael and the other guy, you know.
Oh,
the other guy.
Right. So, yeah.
Andrew Ridgely. Uh-huh. Yeah.
There we go. Andrew Ridgely. That's right. And to his credit, Andrew Ridgely has a very good outlook and sense of humor about being the other guy in Wham. He's totally cool with it. He's done very well by himself. He's a producer. I mean, he has all kinds of other things going on. I got me thinking how many very famous household name, million album selling bands, tens of millions of albums sold, you might just only know one person in the band, you know? Oh, and I mean, of course, there's, you know, a lot of big famous frontmen for various bands. And, you know, it can drop off very quickly past that. So I put together a quiz about the other guys. And that's the name of this quiz, is The Other Guys. All of the questions in this quiz will revolve around bands that I've selected from the list of highest selling bands of all time. All right. I promise you, you know all of these bands, but you may not know the names of all the members of these bands.
Cool.
I was looking at the list, and maybe no surprise, the Beatles, number one. And, you know, it was interesting to me, though, that the Beatles may be one of the only bands on this list where, for not, you know, necessarily a super music fan, you could very likely name all four members. Pretty likely, if you're, especially over a certain age, you could name Ringo Starr, George Harrison, Paul McCartney, John Lennon. It drops off really fast after that, I have to say, like looking at the lists of biggest selling bands. So I had hoped this might make for a good quiz. So let me give you guys the format here. I'm going to start by naming the members of this band for each question in what I consider, the internet considers to be least famous to most famous. So you're going to jump in lightning round style, and you're going to buzz in when you think you know what band I'm talking about, okay? I will award more points the sooner you jump in. Get your barnyard buzzers. And what should we do for Neville? Does Neville, you have like a bell or just anything, just a stick and a block?
Hammer on a wall.
Yeah, just anything that can make a sharp. Oh, great. I love it. That's perfect.
Yep. I have the buzzer sound saved on my phone.
Oh, brilliant.
Wow.
Even with a little click in there and everything. I will tell you all up front, so you're not waiting for it, Fleetwood Mac does not appear on this quiz, despite being one of the best-selling bands of all time. Yes, too far too easy for Chris Kohler here. So, all right.
Hold on. I can name them. There's four of them, right?
No. Karen.
How many?
No.
Oh, okay. Oh, no. Karen.
Well, so I'm glad you mentioned that, because I should say, so many of the bands on this list here, so we're going to be covering bands that were founded in the 60s, 70s, 80s, 90s, household name bands, but a lot of these bands have been around a very long time. Some of them have been stable. Some of them have had, you know, maybe a revolving door of members. So I am not committing to naming every person who has ever been in every iteration of each band, but kind of just sort of the highlights, let's say. All of these bands have four or more members. So the Police do not appear on here. Nirvana does not appear on here. Wham does not appear on this quiz. Get your buzzers ready. Let it flow. Just feel it. It's going to come to you.
You're going from lesser known to more known.
You got it. Maybe we'll start a little easier here. Adam Clayton. Larry Mullen Jr.
Oh, this sounds familiar.
The Edge. Neville, first sound I heard.
You too.
That is indeed you too. All right. And then, of course, I would have rounded that out with Bono. Here we go. Moving right along. Next one. John Deacon. Roger Taylor. Chris.
This is the Who.
Ooh, I'm sorry, Chris. It is not the Who. I'll continue.
Oh.
Brian May.
I.
Neville again.
Queen.
That is Queen. That is Queen.
I was thinking of Queen.
And then the last name, of course, would have been Freddie Mercury if I were to continue Mercury. That list. That's right. All right, here we go. Moving right along. Brian Jones. Bill Wyman. Charlie Watts. Keith Richards. Oh, I think you all buzzed in there at the same time. Karen, what do you got?
Rolling Stones.
Yes, that is the Rolling Stones. And then I would have rounded out with Mick Jagger. So yeah, certainly some of these bands, you know, have a one and a two, maybe.
It's usually like it's the front man and then the guitar player.
That's right. Very often. Yep. Here we go. Maybe get into some a little more tricky territory here. Robert Trujillo, Kirk Hammett, Lars Ulrich, Karen.
Metallica.
That is Metallica. And then I would have listed James Hetfield next. Another band that certainly has had some members come
over the
years. I
was on a plane with
him. Oh, really? Yeah, he's a recognizable dude out in public for sure. Mm-hmm. Next one. Here we go. John Densmore. Robbie Krieger, Ray Manzarek, Jim Morrison. Karen.
The Doors.
That is The Doors. I'll give you 1 point for getting to Mr. Mojo Rison himself, Jim Morrison. Next one. John Paul Jones. John Bonham.
So many Johns.
Robert Plant. Karen.
Pink Floyd.
Ooh, I'm sorry. Chris, want to take a stab?
Yes, Led Zeppelin.
That is Led Zeppelin. All right, Chris on the board here. All right, and then I would have rounded out with Jimmy Page. That's right, Jimmy Page. Yeah, a band that actually had very stable membership over their time.
You know what's really sad? And people, feel free to make fun of me. I'm not ashamed of it. I first knew Jimmy Page. I didn't grow up with classic rock. I knew Jimmy Page because of a song in the Godzilla movie. Do you remember? it's with Puff Daddy. It's like, come
yeah,
with
the
me.
90s were a weird time.
Yeah, oh. It was Puff Daddy featuring Jimmy Page. I was like, who's this guy? Oh.
Well, that was the point, right? Yeah, you know, introduce it to the new audience. Yeah.
All right, well, we'll move forward a little bit in history here, maybe, Karen, give you a little bit of a better chance here. Steven Adler. Duff McKagan. Ooh, Chris, after two.
Guns N' Roses.
That is GNR. Wow. Guns N' Roses. Wow. You got it. That's right.
There's a reason I know that, but I...
Why?
So my friend in college was a big Guns N' Roses fan. He was rushing his fraternity, and then the fraternity gives them all nicknames, you know what I mean? And they were like, oh, what do you think your name's going to be? He's like, well, because I'm a huge Guns N' Roses fan, I'm guessing you're going to name me Axel. And he was like, yeah, well, that was it. But now that you guessed it, we can't name you that. So they named him Duff. His nickname, 4 years of college, was Duff. And I knew that was a Guns N' Roses member. So
that's a Slumdog story.
Slumdog Millionaire, baby.
Incredible.
Yep. Absolute. That's great. And then I was going to round out that list here with Izzy Stradlin /, of course, mm-hmm. Axl Rose yes. himself. That's right. All right. I'll give you guys a little bit of a clue here. There's another American band. All right. Bill Berry. Peter Buck.
Oh,
Mike Mills. Oh, Karen, and with enthusiasm.
R.E.M.
You got it. That is R.E.M. Athens, Georgia's own R.E.M. That's right. And then Michael Stipe would have rounded out that list. Another 3 points to Karen. Ramping up the difficulty here a little bit. Anyone's game. Anyone's game. I'll just say you have many options on this one, all right? Gary Talent. Roy Bittan. Danny Federici. Nils Lofgren, Clarence Clemens, Neville, what do you got for us?
Is that the E Street Band?
You got it. That is the E Street Band. I would have also accepted Bruce Springsteen in the E Street Band. That's right. Patti Scalfa, Max Weinberg, Stephen Van Zandt, and Bruce Frederick Joseph Springsteen. Still anyone's game. Philip Selway. Ed O'Brien.
Oh.
Colin Greenwood.
Oh, why?
Johnny Greenwood. No takers yet. Tom York. Ooh, Karen and Neville, I think at the same time there.
Man.
Karen, what do you got?
Oh, I'm so ashamed because I'm such a big fan. Radiohead.
That is Radiohead. That's right. Radiohead. Tom York, the Greenwood brothers. Johnny Greenwood, of course, no slouch himself, contributing a lot of music to movies these days. That's right. Two more. Here we go. We got a band from the 70s and we got a band from the 90s. You guys figure out which is which. Randy Meisner. Don Felder. Glenn Frey.
Whoa.
Tight one there. Neville, what do you got?
The Eagles?
That is the Eagles.
Don't they have a lot of Dons in the band? Too many Dons?
They got the too many Dons, right? They got Don Felder, Glenn Frey, Joe Walsh, and then, of course, Don Henley.
Yeah.
As I'm sure Chris knows, this is probably right in his wheelhouse. You know, they sort of grew out of being Linda Ronstadt's backing band, essentially, sort of the genesis of the Eagles.
I didn't know that. That's interesting.
Looking at all these highest selling albums lists, there is definitely a bias for bands from a certain era, you know, from sort of the 60s through to maybe the 90s, just in the sweet spot of tracking albums sold, but also albums being a thing versus singles. But to this day, today, as of today, right now, this recording, the Eagles album, Their Greatest Hits, that's the title, Their Greatest Hits, is the highest selling album in the United States all time. All time. More than Thriller, more than Fleetwood Mac's Rumors, more than anything. The Eagles have sold so many records. It's truly incredible.
It's crazy because they only have that one song. We're able to do that.
Well, I'll tell you, Chris, not that I'm like president of the Eagles fan club or anything, but I own this album, Their Greatest Hits, but it does not include Hotel California, which is arguably, that's right. That's, I mean, just to put it in context, they had enough hits for that album to be the highest selling album in US history without Hotel California being on that album.
Yeah. Wild.
Oh my God.
That's because Hotel California would take up an entire CD. You wouldn't be able to fit any other songs no on it.
Yeah. All right. Last one. Here we go. Ryan Duzik. Mickey Madden. Jesse Carmichael. Karen's going to take a guess. What do you got?
It's wrong. It's just because you said Madden. I was like, oh, it's Good Charlotte. But that's like Benji Madden. Sorry.
Wrong. It is not Good Charlotte. It is this is a band sold many more millions of albums. I will continue here. Jesse Carmichael, James Valentine, frontman, Adam Levine.
Oh.
Everyone all together. What is the answer?
Maroon 5.
You got it. I'll give 1 point to everyone here. So, very tight game. Neville, congratulations. Walking away is the winner with, by my count, 13 points. Well done. Acquitted yourself very well. That's right. You know the other. Your other guy certified.
All right. Let's take a quick break and we'll be right back.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
You're listening to Good Job Brain. Smooth puzzles, smart trivia. Good Job Brain.
All right. Well, I think that I should get revenge on everybody here with another musical quiz, if no one minds.
Is it perhaps the thing I promise I did not study for? The parenthetical song title quiz?
That's the one. I hope you did not study, because we don't study on Good Job Brain. I don't know if you know that. No one is ever allowed to study. Earlier this season, just to catch everybody up, in episode 236, I put together a quiz about the Nintendo GameCube, and somehow you'll have to listen to the episode to find out how this happens. We ended up on the topic of Crystal Waters, recording artist behind the unlikely 1991 hit Gypsy Woman, parentheses, She's Homeless. Now, we all had a light chuckle at that, because I think it's like you have this song titled Gypsy Woman and it's like, oh, what's that about? And then you get to the
mysterious
end of the title, like, but then it's in parentheses, like, she's homeless. It's like, oh, okay. You know, I didn't want to leave it in the subtext there. I just wanted to make sure you understood. You know, there's all these song titles out there with parentheses in them. And I think every one of these titles is at least like mildly funny. Like, I don't know why, like, the parentheses, it just makes the song title a little bit funnier.
Totally.
And I said, okay, I'll do a parenthetical song quiz. And so now we're here. It's all quiz bonanza. I did it. The other thing is, there's so many very well-known songs with parentheses in the title. I had no shortage of songs to choose. I could do a part two of this, like, standing on my head. But this is part one. So here's how it's going to work. We have Neville here as our special guest. This quiz is going to be a 3-on-1 format. You three are all on a trivia team now, an ad hoc trivia team.
Oh,
and I am your quiz master. You're all working together. I'm going to ask you a trivia question. The answer to this trivia question is going to be the title of a song that has parentheses somewhere in the title. You are going to pool all of your knowledge and you are going to give me one answer. To get the point for your team, you have to get the song, the words correct in the song title, and the parenthetical placements exactly right.
All right.
If you do not get it exactly right, I get the point.
All right.
So, for example, if I were to give you the question, this Simon and Garfunkel song is named after the structure currently known as the Ed Koch Queensborough Bridge. You would answer, a way you could answer this is, the 59th Street Bridge song, open parentheses, feeling groovy, close parentheses.
Man, all right. Okay.
if you don't want to say it out loud, you can write it. You can designate somebody to write it down too, if you want to.
Oh, we're saying it.
But you got to be, yeah. It's better just to say like open parentheses, close parentheses, just clearly where they are. Okay.
All right. All right.
Okay.
All right. All right.
There's, like Colin said in that episode, there's just so much story in the parentheses.
Yes. Yeah.
Feeling groovy.
Well, okay. Yeah. Again. So here we go. Here's question number one. All right. You're all working together. Question number one. Back to the Rolling Stones. The Rolling Stones' first number one song in the United States was this 1965 banger about Mick Jagger's inability to obtain any contentment.
Okay. All right.
I think it's open parenthesis, I can't get no, close parenthesis, satisfaction.
Satisfaction. Okay. I mean, just linguistically, it's not going to be satisfaction, parens, I can't get no, you know?
Right.
So, yeah. And if you're going to choose part of the song to emphasize.
But now I'm doubting, like, is the I part of it? Is it just can't get no?
Can't get no. Right. Chris did say exact.
All right. Time to throw out an answer.
I don't think I is in there. I think it's can't get no.
Really? Okay.
Satisfactory. Neville, why not you be the official deliverer?
Sure. We'll go with open parenthesis, can't get no, close parenthesis, satisfaction.
Should have put that I in there.
No!
Open parenthesis, I can't get no, close parenthesis, satisfaction. That is 1 point for me.
That's okay.
Question number two. The apocalypse never sounded like so much fun as it did in this 1987 hit from REM.
Okay.
It's the end of the world as we know it.
And I feel fine. I think it's the end of the world as we know it, parens, and I feel fine. There's just a journey of self-doubt on each of these questions here.
So Colin, you're saying, it's the end of the world as we know it,
yep.
Parentheses.
With the word and, yes.
Oh, it's so long.
All right, time to wrap it up and get an answer. What's the answer?
It's the end of the world as we know it, open parenthesis, and I feel fine, close parenthesis.
Correct, yes, very good.
Well done.
That is it. Oh my God. That is exactly it. All right.
I'm like sweating.
This is actually really dovetailing, I think, with Colin's quiz very much, because these are all extremely popular songs. And nobody quite knows exactly what the title of these songs is.
Or the punctuation.
You introduce the parentheses, it just confuses it all. Okay, number three, question three. This 1985 song by artist John Parr was written for a Brat Pack film whose name makes up part of the song's title.
It's St. Elmo's Fire.
Man in Motion. I think Man in Motion is in brackets afterwards.
Oh, do you...
I think it's St. Elmo's Fire, open parenthesis, Man in Motion, close parenthesis.
I only know the song because Colin talked about how that's the only song he sang once at karaoke ever.
Quite terribly. Yeah, let's just not...
Man in...
Colin, you sang it. What's it called?
I was very drunk at the time, perhaps too much so.
I think Neville's right. I think it's St. Elmo's Fire because they're also promoting the movie.
Yeah, it's sort of a The Goonies Are Good Enough type situation.
Yeah, go for it.
Okay, we'll say...
Yes.
St. Elmo's Fire, open parenthesis, Man in Motion, close parenthesis.
You got it. Absolutely right. Yep. St. Elmo's Fire is the main title of the song, and then Man in Motion is the... You know, and this is one of those cases where the song's title doesn't really remind the listener, like, what this is. Like, what's that song about the man in motion? You know what I mean? So they put it in parentheses. It's like, oh, yeah, no, this is the one.
The St. Elmo's Fire song. Yes.
Question number four. There is a certain 1987 film that I'm sure you know and love that ends with two young lovebirds at a resort in the Catskills dancing to this song.
I've had...
From Dirty Dancing?
I just want to throw this out there. I'm not saying this is it. I want to throw it out. Is it something like the theme from Dirty Dancing, parens, I've had the time of my life. I just want to throw it out. No self-censorship. We all know the rules. I just want to say that.
I've had parentheses and then the time of my life.
The is in the main title. So it's parenthesis, I've had, close parenthesis, the time of my life.
That is it. That is absolutely it.
Great work, team.
The could have been anywhere, but yes, it's the time of the song is called "The Time of My Life," but the full title is "I've Had the Time of My Life."
It's like, why do they bother? You know what I mean? Like, who?
It's like they're not confident.
Yeah,
just make it into the title.
Or it's like two co-writers and they just couldn't agree, and they're like, all right, you know what? We're just gonna put this in parens, and we're just gonna say, okay,
Question number five. People always ask Meatloaf what this song's title means. And his answer is, it's not a mystery. It's a response to the line in the song, sooner or later, you'll be screwing around.
Okay, Meatloaf.
I'd do anything for love, but I won't do that.
But I won't do that.
Is it, I would do anything for love, or I'd do anything for love?
I think it's I'd.
I'd.
Okay. I don't have a real strong feeling. I just wanted to just throw it out there.
I'd do anything for love, open parenthesis, but I won't do that, close parenthesis.
That is it. And I would not have taken I would. It is I'd. Even though he doesn't say that in the song. Again, this is all about like, oh, really? That's the title? Yeah, the title is I'd do anything for love, parentheses, but I won't do that, close parentheses. So on the board for you guys. Question number six. Rupert Holmes sang this song about taking out a classified advertisement looking for a drinking buddy with benefits.
Is this Pina Colada song?
It is Escape, the Pina Colada song.
Yeah, I think that's right. I feel very strong.
Why? Yeah. Why is it written like that?
Because he knew. He knew exactly what he was selling.
Yep.
And it was Pina Coladas. It wasn't Escape.
What part are drunk bar patrons going to be singing along with on the jukebox?
Pina Colada song!
Right. We'll say Escape, open parenthesis, the Pina Colada song, close parenthesis.
Another example of here's my real poetic artsy title for the song, and then in parentheses is what all you people call it. It's Escape, open parentheses, the Pina Colada song, close parentheses. Another point on the board for you guys. You're doing very well here. Great job. We're gonna move right along. Question number seven. The signature song of artist Darlene Love, this originally appeared on the album A Christmas Gift for You from Phil Spector.
Man, we talked about this on the show too. I completely forgot. Which Christmas song is it? It's something like I'm coming home for like.
I believe it's Rocking Around the Christmas Tree.
You know, this quiz is hard because first you have to know what song you're asking from the trivia. Yeah, and then you have to decide on where the stupid punctuation marks are.
Because I could see it being Rocking Around, parentheses, the Christmas Tree. Could be parentheses Rocking Around the.
What if it's Rocking Around parentheses the Christmas Tree?
I feel like that's our best guess, even if it's the wrong song.
Okay. I'm on board with
We'll go with that. Rocking Around parentheses the Christmas Tree, close parentheses.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Okay. I don't know how that song's title is parenthesized, if indeed it is at all, but the song we're looking for is titled Christmas. Parentheses, baby, please come home.
Oh, I said it too,
you kind of had a hint on that, Karen. You did.
1 point for me. So basically, the song's title is just Christmas. Yeah.
the audacity.
Yeah, right? There's never been a song about this. Can't believe no one's thought of this before. Question eight. You wake up late for school, man, you don't want to go. You ask your mom, please, but she still says no.
Oh,
well, your mom says no, but the Beastie Boys say this.
All right. Fight for your right to party. Is it? I don't think it's you gotta fight for your right to party. I think it's
Cullen,
just.
I think it's a double bracket. I think it's open parenthesis. You gotta, close parenthesis, fight for your right, open parenthesis, to party.
No.
You are blowing my mind.
That feels Chris Colerian to me.
It does, and very Beastie Boysian too.
No, yeah, that's right? Too outrageous.
You think that's too outrageous?
To have the double set of parens? I mean, he didn't say anything about only one set of parens. I don't know.
But Neville, you have the last word.
You have the last word
I'm,
on this one.
I'm at that Venn diagram where I think it's both. I'm going to call his bluff on the double and say, open parenthesis, you gotta, close parenthesis, fight for your right, open parenthesis, to party, close parenthesis.
It. It'll feel so good if we're right. I love yeah. it.
You are 100% correct. That is it. It is the out of nowhere double parenthesis. You gotta, in parenthesis, fight for your right, and then another set of parentheses opens up just when you thought you were done. Incredible. I put that down because I wanted an extra point, but you stole that point away from me with your incredible parenthetical
really.
Prowess.
Yep, Colerian move to be sure.
Extremely Colerian, yes. Very well spotted. Yeah. All right, I feel like we're having a good time here. I'm just going to keep going with these. Question number 9. Jay-Z chose an unusual sample to build this 1998 song around. What the Broadway musical Annie?
Right. So mm-hmm. is it
Hard Knock Life?
Is it mm-hmm. parens? It's a and then Hard Knock Life, or is
oh.
it?
I can't remember if the original song even has the Itza in the title. And so he might have put in the Itza.
Just to sound.
Oh, I see. Yeah, you could argue it either way, right.
Oh, okay. Like the original was just Hard Knock Life.
We'll say, open parenthesis, Itza, close parenthesis, Hard Knock Life.
Unfortunately, you guys got sidetracked and off the complete wrong direction with this one.
No.
The actual title of the song is Hard Knock Life, open parentheses, Ghetto Anthem.
That's right.
We took the wrong fork.
Exactly. You got distracted by the Itza. Okay. Question number 10. This Aretha Franklin hit was covered by Carole King on her album Tapestry.
I think that's You Make Me Feel Like a Natural Woman.
Yeah. You Make Me Feel Like a in the parens. And I might be wrong.
I think is part of the title. Oh, Natural Woman versus A Natural Woman.
I think it's just Natural Woman.
All right, Neville, you call it.
You call it.
I'm going to go for open parenthesis, You Make Me Feel Like a, close parenthesis, Natural Woman.
Wrong. Wrong. The title is open parenthesis, You Make Me Feel Like, close parenthesis, a Natural Woman.
I'm sorry, Karen.
Not even I knew until I looked at that and I was like, huh, the song's title is A Natural Woman. You Make Me Feel Like in the parentheses. Weird, right? I didn't know that.
Yeah, a little bit.
But we're having fun. I have two more. Right now, you guys have 5 points and I have 4 points. So I have How's that possible? We just did, forget it. Just don't even pay attention. Probably you guys have 6 points. Question number 11. How Can I Just Let You Walk Away, sang Phil Collins in this theme song to a 1984 film.
I don't know.
Against All Odds, Take a Look at Me Now?
Yeah.
Oh, right. Take a Look at Me Now.
I don't know, y'all.
Was this, I at the risk of being the boy who cried wolf, I just want to say it. Is it possible that this is another one where, like, it's the theme from, because it was in a movie, right?
What movie is it from?
Against All Odds.
Against All Odds, parentheses.
Ah, man.
Take a look at me now.
Close parenthesis.
Let's just go for it.
Okay. Against All Odds, open parenthesis. Take a Look at Me Now, close parenthesis.
That's it. You got
Yay! It. Hey, all right.
The teamwork.
That follows
the movie title rule.
It follows the movie title rule. Exactly. Yep. Title of the movie and then what the song actually says. Yeah. finally, question number 12. Let's go right back to the Beatles. John Lennon and Paul McCartney wrote this song about a guy who, I guess, burns a woman's house down, apparently, in the end. I don't know.
I don't know the Beatles. So Colin will have to carry us.
Who burns a woman's house down?
He hangs out at her apartment or her house, and then at the end, he just sets it on fire.
Whoa. You stumped them.
Maxwell Silverhammer?
No, that's about him killing Moomoo with a hammer.
That's yeah. Yes.
I wouldn't have buried the lead on that one.
Yeah. Okay. Right.
House on Fire.
I mean, it's got to be later period. It's not going to be. I'm trying to run through like Sergeant Pepper's. I'm trying to run through it. I mean, hangs around, burns around. Wait.
Can you sing a bar? Are you picking up
it's
on a
Obla
line or anything?
I think.
Desmond has a burr in the marketplace. I don't think that's because they get married, happy ever after, in the marketplace.
Yeah,
Molly is a singer
in
the band.
Yeah,
Desmond
sees
at home and does his pretty face. Right.
This is amazing, you guys.
We might need to dip for a hint, or Chris is just going to zero us out.
It is from the album Rubber Soul.
Oh,
okay.
That's a weird one, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Norwegian Wood.
This bird has flown.
Oh yes, you're right. That is yes.
I think it's Norwegian Wood. Parenthesis. This bird has flown. Close parenthesis.
Yes, that's it. You got it. Congratulations.
Oh my God.
You're incredible.
Do you know what? That is an excellent illustration of team based trivia, because you guys, you know, sort of like maybe the sort of the Beatles experts couldn't think of it. Karen throws out like this one song that she's heard of, and then it's like, oh, boom, that's it. And I know the parenthetical part. I mean, that's you would not have been able to reach that individually, but it's like a team of people can reach a conclusion that each of those individuals working separately would not have been able to reach.
Yes, sir.
And I think that's a beautiful illustration of team-based pub trivia right there. So great job, everybody.
I was hoping for the Offspring. Offspring has a bunch.
Don't spoil part two.
I now have, I know. Well, now I can't use that. Well, now, no, I have a whole massive list. There's so many that I could do it again. Okay. So, yeah.
Traffic jams, tailgating, pileups. Ugh, the joys of driving. How could it get worse? The federal government wants to have a say in what you drive. That's right. The Biden administration's EPA is pushing mandates that would ban 2 out of every 3 vehicles on the road today. Don't let Washington become your backseat driver. Protect the freedom of driving your way. Visit energycitizens.org. Paid for by the American Petroleum Institute.
Today, our special guest, Neville Fogarty, is joining us for our All Quiz Bonanza number 48. And it's your turn to shine. Neville, what do you have in store for us?
Well, thanks, Karen. Since y'all were so kind enough to invite me to join you today, I really didn't want to feel like I was coming between you. And I took that as my inspiration for this quiz, which I call Between You and Me. In this quiz, I will give you 2 things, and you just have to tell me what comes in between them.
Okay.
So sometimes that'll be physically, sometimes geographically, temporally. It's up to you to figure that out. So we'll do this on the buzzer. So go ahead and grab your Barnyard buzzers. And here's your first one.
All right.
What comes between faster and stronger? That looks like that might have been Colin.
I believe the Olympic slogan is faster, higher, stronger.
Oh.
Yes. So higher is what comes in the middle. That's right. That's Citius Altius Fortius, the Olympic motto.
I thought it was the Daft Punk song.
I'm thinking of Daft Punk, and I'm like, nothing?
Me too.
Yes, so that, a little misdirect there.
Yeah, good. I love it. That's right. Good.
While researching this, that was called hendiatrice. That's a word from the Greek for a figure of speech with 3 related parts. So like lock, stock, and barrel. And that just comes from the Greek for 1 through 3. That's the hen, like in hendecagon, in tris. I tried to then stay away from that example of just 3 words in a phrase. So well done getting that one, Colin. And here comes something completely different.
Neville, did you just slip in hendecagon?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I teach math. That's what I do for a living.
That makes sense. We just learned that recently on the show. You're just like, oh, hendecagon. We're like, wow, I know that word now.
Yes, I am familiar with that word.
Here's your next one. What comes between market and roast beef? Karen.
Stayed home, as in this little piggy?
That's exactly right. It's home.
Yes!
That's what your little piggies do in the nursery rhyme. So these can come from any walk of life. For example, what comes between troposphere and mesosphere.
Oh, I don't know. Man. I'm so bad at these.
All right. So, okay.
Karen. I'll just throw it out there. Stratosphere.
It's stratosphere. You've done it.
Yeah.
Sometimes the strategy is say the one you know. Yep. Those are the layers of the atmosphere. The troposphere is the lowest one, the one that we're in, where weather takes place. Then stratosphere, mesosphere, thermosphere, and exosphere.
Okay. And exo's for what it's worth,
well, I found a mnemonic because at Good Job Brain, we love a mnemonic. And the best one I could find was the snow makes things exciting. But I still take issue because there are two of the words that start with T.
Yeah.
And they both have the TH. So I want it to be like a TR word. Snow
Trash.
Makes things exciting. Trash snow makes things exciting. Perfect. Mm-hmm. That's our mnemonic for the layers of the atmosphere. What comes between George Washington and Theodore Roosevelt? Single thing?
Oh.
Is it Thomas Jefferson?
It is Thomas Jefferson. Yes. Okay, why?
Because they're on Mount Rushmore in that
That's
order?
Exactly right. Yeah. Yes.
Okay. We went as Mount Rushmore one year for a dress-up night for our pub quiz years ago. And I remember, like, we printed out a little, you know, popsicle sticks of, like, the faces. And we masks. Also had to, like, try and cram together and get the masks in the right order. And,
it's so good. It's such a good costume.
Oh, that's great.
Somewhere, we'll see if we can find the picture of that.
What comes between Jan and Peter?
Oh.
Chris.
Alice.
Yes, it's Alice.
Yeah. Alice being, of course, in the center of the 9-square grid that starts every episode.
The TV intro.
The little blue backgrounds. Right. I was thinking ages at first. You had a good distractor there. I was like, but wait, but Jen and Peter are both the middle kids, so there's no...
Exactly right. Yeah, I've tried to make these so that there is one definitive thing in between.
Mm. Love it.
With that in mind, tell me, what comes between pulp and enamel?
Oh.
Okay.
Chris.
The regular part of the tooth.
Stalling.
You're stalling.
Tooth bone.
It's not the tooth bone.
I hope it's this because it's the only other part I know. Is it the dentin?
It is the dentin. Well done.
Wow.
Chris is right that we are thinking about the tooth here. And so the enamel is that surface on top. And then sort of the core is the pulp. And in between is the dentin.
At first I was like, orange juice.
What comes between pulp and no pulp? Some pulp.
2%. Next up, what comes between Illinois Avenue and Atlantic Avenue?
Oh, man.
Karen.
These are the red properties of Monopoly, and I think it's Kentucky.
I can tell you that Kentucky is a red avenue in Monopoly, and so is Illinois. But the answer is not Kentucky.
I was just going to say, all right, my thing is one of the railroads or one of the utilities. I'm so bad at the Orient. I'll say Reading.
Reading.
B&O.
Reading
it
Railroad.
Is not Reading Railroad. B&O Railroad.
Good one. Wow, that's hard. That comes up in trivia a lot.
Oh, it does. Monopoly board. It really does.
Rife for trivia.
What comes between Captain and Lieutenant Colonel?
Ooh.
Go for it, Colin.
Major?
It's Major. You've done it.
Hey! Wow.
That's exactly right.
All right.
These are officer ranks in the U.S. Army.
Okay. I was going to say, I wasn't sure what branch, but yeah, all right. U.S. Army ranks. Okay.
Next, what comes, if you can remember this, between left shark and right shark? Yes, Chris.
Katy Perry.
Yes, it's Katy Perry from the 2015 Super Bowl. I'm going to give you a hint for this one. The answer is not Cleveland.
Okay. All right.
So tell me, what comes between Cleveland and Cleveland?
Okay.
Okay. So who was president between Grover Cleveland's two non-consecutive terms is how I'm interpreting this question. There's absolutely no excuse for us not knowing these inside and out. And yet here we are with our pants down again. Yeah. So
I mean, I'll tell you, you have the exact right idea here.
I'll put myself out on the limb here. Was it Chester Arthur?
It's not Chester Arthur. Yeah, Chris.
Chester A. Arthur.
whether the A is in parentheses or not, yeah. It is not any form of Chester Arthur.
Chester, okay. A natural woman.
That's what the A stands for. It's Harrison, as in Benjamin Harris.
Okay. Benji.
Okay.
Tell me, what comes between Ghana and Benin? And call it.
I'm pretty sure I know this. I believe it's Togo.
It is Togo.
My ninth grade teacher, I got to give it up to Mrs. Heppner. She said, all right, Ghana, Togo, Benin. She remember, go to bed. And that to me now, all these years later, still sticks with me. If I'm looking up, go to bed, GTB.
Tell me what comes between sulfur and argon.
Oh, man.
All right. Well, argon is a noble gas, so it's all the way on the right, you know, so it's
I like that thought.
Be slightly, okay. Slightly to the left of it. Yeah.
Fluorine
is one of the halogens, but it's the one that's next to oxygen.
So we're down one row. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And okay, if you listen to fluorine, you might get a rhyming.
Chlorine
is it. Oh, nicely done.
Nice.
What comes between a loose head prop and a tight head prop? I can tell.
Let's
you.
Let's go. Yeah.
Okay. Go for it, Chris.
Medium head prop.
It's a brilliant idea, but
if that's not it, that's at least, you know, process of let's get it out there.
I'm not even sure what arena we're in here. Is this like aircraft, like a propeller? I mean, is this?
This is someone whose job is to prop someone else.
Puppetry?
But some other field puppetry. where you might so rely on someone for physical support.
Like okay. Cheerleading?
These are positions
in
rugby.
Oh.
They support the person who reaches in with their legs in the scrum to try and get the ball.
Huh.
And that player is called
the quarterback.
no, that it's the hooker
the
because they
hooker
hook the ball and pull it back.
Wow.
They're also called the rake. That's a toughie.
That's a
some
tough
specialized
one.
Knowledge. And here's your last one. Tell me what comes between it's your funeral home and crematorium and a different shop in nearly every episode.
Oh, gosh.
Oh.
Colin.
Is that Bob's Burgers?
It is Bob's Burgers.
Okay.
The restaurant Bob's Burgers on the TV show of the same name sits between a funeral home and crematorium. And in the opening sequence, we see that the building on the other side is newly renovated and a different store has taken over in each episode. For example, a fridge too far used appliances or you can't handle the tooth dental extraction.
Okay. Their puns are so good.
Yeah,
their puns really are so good.
Well done. You all got so many points that I frankly lost track.
Here's a bit of a behind the scenes story. This is not my quiz. Actually, Colin, you touched upon this earlier. Even though we've been making this show since 2012, making quizzes is still like it's a process filled with ups and downs, right? There are like half-baked ideas, half-written quizzes, or even like failed ideas that never even make it to the air.
Right.
I have so many of them. It's tricky because sometimes it's about gauging difficulty. Sometimes it's about execution. Sometimes it's about maybe it doesn't seem as fun. So it's a lot of things to balance. So I want to tell you guys this quiz idea that I had for this episode that I absolutely love, but I just couldn't get it to work But as a silver lining, I found something really, really interesting that I would like to share. So back in episode 225, All Quiz 45, I debuted a quiz, hopefully you guys remember, where I used the text-to-speech AI to make famous cartoon characters read, recite Shakespeare lines.
I still have nightmares about some of them, yes.
And you had to identify the play and identify the cartoon character speaker, right? Here's an example.
All that glitters is not gold.
So for this week, I wanted to do something similar. You know those inspirational or cheeky quote signs that people put on their walls?
Yes.
As like decor?
Yes, yeah, successories.
Live, love. What is it? Successories?
Oh, I thought you were talking about like the corporate ones. Like, you know.
Oh, those too.
Oh, yeah. Where, you know, it's like teamwork. And it's a picture of, you know, like animals like making a bridge to get some food or something like that. Yeah. Right.
Successories. Right.
Yeah.
Oh, that's so good.
So, but you're talking about more like the stuff that they hang up at the live, laugh, love written in cursive on the kitchen
right, the wall. Yeah. Okay. All right.
Live, laugh, love, another hendiatrist.
My idea for this quiz, I was going to go on Etsy, find some wall decor quotes, and then use the same text-to-speech AI to get like famous cartoon voices to read them out loud, and you have to identify the voices. I just couldn't get it to work. But I found a lot of good quotes, like, you know, like, don't talk to me until I have coffee. But I did find the origin to the live, laugh, love phenomenon.
No,
really? Yes.
Whoa.
There's an origin story. So most people think it's Emerson quote.
Oh,
American writer, poet.
Yes, I certainly thought that. Yes.
People attribute, but it's not. It is not. The original came from poet Bessie Anderson Stanley in her poem called Success. So titled Success. And the passage reads, I'll read it to you. He has achieved success, who has lived well, laughed often, and loved much. This is actually etched on her headstone.
Hmm.
By the way, this is the second time this season I had to go to findagrave.com to fact check the gravestone. But like, so this larger passage of the poem is on her gravestone. So, and somehow people just kind of condensed it into from that passage to, oh, live, laugh, love. According to Google, searches for live, laugh, love took off in 2004 and really, really peaked at 2008. And analysts actually theorized that it was because of Pinterest, Etsy, and the recession, the 2008 recession. And people were really looking for that feel-good positivity and also like an easy and cheap way to like decorate their homes or make their house feel homey and safe, you know, through in the midst of recession. As of right now, I've searched for Live, Laugh, Love on Etsy. There are 12,000 things. There are 12,000 different Live, Laugh, Love products. Some are parody. They're candles. They're signs. But yeah, Live, Laugh, Love. Not an Emerson quote. It is from Bessie Anderson Stanley, the mother of Live, Laugh, Love. So much sports talk. I wasn't really anticipating so much sports talk in this episode because, as you know, it's not our area of expertise. In the spirit of always bettering ourselves, a lot like Dana always used to make us do on these shows, is always
take your medicine.
Our fears. Yeah, take our medicine. So here I have a quiz about sports. Colorful and descriptive sport jargon.
Ooh.
Terminology. There's the three of you guys. I have 9 questions. We're going to rotate around. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to tell you the sport and I'm going to tell you the very descriptive jargon. And I want you to answer what you think it's describing.
All right.
And we'll do it in turns. So who wants to start first?
I'll go for it.
All right.
All right. Neville, special guest. In ice skating, what is a hair cutter?
You've got these skates with blades on them. And so I can imagine that this is like someone taking a bit of a T where they have one leg normal and the front of their body is leaning forward and their other leg is up and they're going to spin around and they're going to sort of go above someone's head.
I love the imagination. A hair cutter is when a single skater, they're spinning and they hold one of their ankles to their head, and then they lean back. Their head leans back, right? So they're bringing that blade close to their head, and they're spinning. That is a hair cutter.
Wow.
All right, next one. Chris, in bowling, what is a ham bone? What do you think a ham bone is?
What is a ham bone?
All of these terms, they're not you know it or you don't. They're descriptive enough that you can kind of go with it. It kind of clues into to what they are.
Right, right, right. A ham bone. Okay. I mean, I'm sort of I'm picturing like a wishbone type shape. I mean, is it a certain configuration of pins that are left after a ball strike, like a certain type of split of the pins?
I like that idea.
I like that idea. That actually I read is called a sour apple. It's you bowl and then there's a split that happens.
That's a sour apple.
A ham bone is the next evolution of a turkey.
Oh, really? So it's four strikes
four
in a row?
Four strikes in a row.
Okay, yes.
You upgrade from your turkey feast to a ham.
That's a downgrade for me, but okay.
All right, Colin, you're next. In skiing, what is a milk run?
A milk run.
Or a milk route.
I'll say that is like a super easy route or a super easy path. Like I know like sometimes in skiing, they have like, you know, you can take different, you know, routes down the slopes. I'll say it's a really easy one.
You're close. In skiing, a milk run is the first run of the day, usually early in the morning. So it's like a milkman on his route.
Oh, okay.
On their route, milk person. The snow conditions are maybe a little bit better, so it's a great way to like warm up for the rest of the day. Neville, your turn. In Australian rules football, we have to include Australian rules football.
Sure.
They just had the grand finals. In Australian rules football, what is a glue pot? I'll give you a hint. It's not a move or a person. What is a glue pot? Something that is sticky?
Yeah, I mean, I feel like Australian rules football is the one where sometimes people will pick other people up.
Yeah.
Yes.
And I want to see if that one thing that I know about Australian rules football might it all be related to a glue. Like maybe it has to do with what if there's a like a mud puddle on the pitch.
That's exactly what it is.
What?
Really?
Amazing. Is describing the conditions where the field, maybe after a rain, it gets sticky. And so like traversing through that part of the pitch, the field is sticky. And it's like going through glue pot.
That's good.
Wow.
All right. Chris, you're up. In rowing.
Okay.
What is catching a crab?
I mean, I wish that it was like the oar comes literally up out of the water and there's just a crab hanging onto it. Then you win. Then you win the rowing for the day.
The golden crab.
But I'm pretty sure that's not it. Okay. So, I mean, you know, crabs, you know, the two kind of thing, like if two oars like smack into each other or interlock or something like that.
You're so close. So close. I'm going to give it to you. It is a rower with a faulty stroke. It catches the water in kind of the wrong way and it whips the handle of the oar into your face.
Oh, okay.
Oh.
I mean, not good. It's not good, but it's really funny when you do a Google image search of catching a crab or rowing. It's a lot of like high speed photographs of people like, oof great faces.
Fantastic.
Wow. Very, very good guess. Very good guess. All right, Colin.
Yeah.
You're next. In golf, what is afraid of the dark?
Huh. Afraid of the dark. Afraid of the dark in golf. The ball does something. You say the ball's afraid of the dark, or maybe say the I don't know. Like a ball that goes in the sand. It likes the light. It doesn't want the lights to go off.
Well, that could be okay. What's dark? What's a dark place that the ball?
Oh, Chris, no, yeah, it doesn't want to go in the hole. It doesn't want to go in the hole. It's afraid of the dark. Thank you, Chris, for leading me by the nose there to that one. Yes, the ball that won't go in the hole. It's afraid of the dark.
It's the player's fault, but you're blaming the ball.
No, it's afraid of the dark. Fault.
Yeah, it's always the ball's fault. Poor ball. All right, Neville. Last one for you. In cricket, what is a Bunsen? The full term is Bunsen burner.
Well, thank you.
Rhyming slang.
Slang. Okay. Bunsen burner, something that rhymes with burner. Earner, learner. It could be a learner, like someone who's new to it and is a rookie.
Oh, that person's a real Bunsen.
Yeah. Mm. A turner or a returner?
You got it. It is a turner.
It's a turner? A ball that turns when
spins.
It's bowled?
It's turning.
That's great. Wow. I wish we had more Cockney rhyming slang in the U.S. I know that's a nonsensical statement, but
it's like a puzzle.
Yeah, it's great. It is.
It's a built-in puzzle.
Yep.
All right, Chris, you're next. In tennis and sometimes in other sports like Ultimate Frisbee, what is a bagel?
What is a bagel? Oh, is it? Well, wait, no, I mean, I was going to say, it's a hole-in-one, but I don't think so.
A tennis hole-in-one.
But what do you think? Yeah, I mean, that's what I think. It's like something, I keep playing tennis, but I can't get the ball to go into
Chris,
the hole.
Chris, we get a bagel in sports trivia.
Oh, is it literally just, it's just a zero?
It is zero. In tennis specifically, it is a 6-0 set.
Yeah.
But in a lot of sports, it is just zero because it has a hole through it. All right, last question. And this is the one that inspired this quiz. Colin, in baseball, what is a snow cone?
Oh, I know a snow. I know one. Confidently, a snow cone. I know this. Snow cone. Snow cone is when a fielder goes to catch the ball and catches it, but just barely. It's like in the tip of their glove, and you see it poking out. out the top of their gloves, and it looks like they're holding a little snow cone. Yeah,
that is exactly correct. And for some reason, this cracked me up so much. I just looked at pictures of it. I just call this phenomenon a snow cone. It's just ball is on top of their folded glove, and it looks like they're carrying a snow. It's ridiculous. Anyways, thank you everybody for my sports jargon quiz, all
Loved
inspired
it.
By
Love it. Love
the
it.
Snow cone.
That's so creative.
That's the end of the show. Neville, thank you so much for joining us. Hopefully you had a good time. We had a good time.
This was such a blast. I hope I'll get to be back sometime.
Neville, where can people find you?
If you're a person who enjoys solving puzzles, you can find my work all over the place. Cryptics in the New Yorker and Standard American Puzzles, occasionally in USA Today, the New York Times, and other places. And if, for whatever reason, you want to find me on Twitter, I'm at Flying Elevator, and I'll leave you with the puzzle of figuring out why.
All right, and that is our show. You can find us on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, and on all podcast apps, and on our website, goodjobbrain.com. This podcast is part of the Airwave Media Podcast Network. Visit airwavemedia.com to listen and subscribe to other shows like Movie Therapy, Big Picture Science, and The Secret History of Hollywood. And we'll see you next week.
Bye.
Traffic jams, tailgating, pileups. Ugh, the joys of driving. How could it get worse? The federal government wants to have a say in what you drive. That's right. The Biden administration's EPA is pushing mandates that would ban 2 out of every 3 vehicles on the road today. Don't let Washington become your backseat driver. Protect the freedom of driving your way. Visit EnergyCitizens.org. Paid for by the American Petroleum Institute.